Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Melanie C., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Tuesday, August 11th, 2020, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book. We're in the section titled The Doctor's Opinion on page XXVIII. We're going to be at paragraph 3 today, unpack that single paragraph. If any feel that a psychiatrist, that's the way it begins, and then ends with altruistic movement, now growing up among them. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Karen K., the 12 Traditions, Margaret N. Reading the book today and being support would be Leslie M., Kara L., Laura R. Newcomers and sponsors will be afforded to Elaine B., and the announcements at the end of the meeting will be Robin P. The share ID number for yesterday's 10 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study meeting is 15132, 15,132, and that would be for August 10th, 2020. And then this morning at 7 a.m. Eastern Time, we already had a meeting, and that number for that particular meeting is 15135, 15,135. That would be for August 11th, 2020. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer, our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Karen Kay to read the 12 steps of OA.
Good morning. I'm Karen Kay, a recovered, grateful recovered compulsive overeater, and my credits don't transfer from Syracuse, New York. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so to injure them or others. 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we are wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And thank you for letting me be of service and for Team Tuesday. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much, Karen Kay. And now I will ask Margaret N. to read the 12 Traditions of Overeaters Anonymous.
Good morning, everybody. This is Margaret N., a compulsive overeater in recovery in Loomis, California. The 12 Traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And thank you, everybody, for being here. I'm so grateful to be a part of this meeting, and I pass.
Thank you very much, Margaret N. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to remute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting and a quiet recording, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book. We're in the doctor's opinion on page XXVIII, those Roman numerals there. We're going to unpack paragraph 3 today, and it begins with, if any feel that as psychiatrists, and ends with altruistic movement now growing up among us. And I will ask Leslie M. to read that paragraph for us, unpack it with the directions that she applies, and then we'll pass it on to you all to comment on it. Hey, Leslie, good morning.
Good morning, Melanie C. Thank you so much for your service. I am Leslie M. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Long Island, New York. If any feel that as psychiatrists directing a hospital for alcoholics, we appear somewhat sentimental, let them stand with us while on the firing line. See the tragedies, the despairing wives, the little children. Let the solving of these problems become a part of their daily work and even of their sleeping moments. And the most cynical will not wonder that we have accepted and encouraged this movement. We feel, after many years of experience, that we have found nothing which has contributed more to the rehabilitation of these men than the altruistic movement now growing up among them. The first thing that hits me about this paragraph is Dr. Silkworth's absolute humility. You know, he says here, after many years of experience, we have found nothing which has contributed more to the recovery of these men. And I certainly know that, you know, I've been around this year, I'll be in OA 30 years, and I'm coming up on 2.5 years of recovery and entire abstinence. And nothing has contributed more for me than this altruistic movement to this recovery was, you know, letting go. I had to, you know, it talks about throughout the book about breaking down the ego and looking to help others. And that's what altruism is. I'm looking to help somebody else without any regard for if I'm going to get something in return. And the thing is that in this case, I get a lot in return. I get, you know, I have this recovered state that I can be in every day. And, you know, that is the biggest payoff that I've ever gotten in my life. I tell people that I speak to on the phone, you know, that this is beyond my wildest dreams. Being in OA 30 years and not getting it for all those years, I didn't think there was anything but white-knuckled abstinence. And what I found today is, you know, I call it, I'm grateful to call it my empty brain, because that mental obsession has been removed. But it's through doing this work entirely abstinently and, you know, and following these steps and knowing that I'm recovered one day at a time, that I have to continue to do this work. But the other part of this paragraph that you know, talks to me is seeing the tragedies as despairing wives of little children, let the solving of these problems become a part of their daily work. I was the cause of those problems, you know. Other people would be looking to figure out my problems, how I was affecting other people. And, you know, and I'm grateful to say today I'm not perfect. I'm still human. But that, you know, I create less drama. I'm less of a tornado roaring through other people's lives today. And I'm very, very grateful to my higher power for that. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Leslie M. Appreciate that. The lines are now going to be open for additional comments on that paragraph. Let me remind you, if you're just slipping in, it's the doctor's opinion in the Roman numerals, XXVIII, fourth edition of the Big Book. We're on paragraph 3. We're going to unpack that single paragraph today. And it says, if any feel that a psychiatrist and ends with altruistic movement now growing up among us. And if you're interested in sharing and you haven't shared in the last 3 days, then we'd love to hear from you. We do really respect and cherish all of the experience that comes through on this line, but we'd like to give a chance for other people to share. So if you shared on Friday or Monday, consider skipping until tomorrow, if you wouldn't mind, please. Thank you. Appreciate that very much. I'll take the first name and the first initial of your last name.
Freya.
I hear Freya. Did I? And then somebody C. Nicole, is that you?
Yes, Nicole C. in California.
Devorah, did I hear Devorah?
Devori F.
Devori, okay. Hester F, like Frank.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Gotcha. Okay, anybody else? And did I hear Freya? I didn't hear back from you. Did I hear from you?
Yes, Freya.
Okay, great, thanks. Well, in the interest of this precious time ticking away, I'm going to start with those that are going to just really fire this thing up this morning. I have Freya H., Nicole C., and Devori F., like Frank. Good morning, Freya.
Good morning, Melanie. Thank you. Freya H., compulsive eater, bulimic, in Colorado.
Hey, Freya, just 1 second. There's some crackling going on. I don't know if it's a headset that you're on or not, but it might be more helpful for the recording. And great. Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you. It's the headset. Thanks for letting me know. Freya H., compulsive eater, bulimic in Colorado. This paragraph, my note next to this paragraph is that it's a family disease and that it's complicated. You know, that if it were a simple procedure to treat this disease, we wouldn't need all of this stuff. But this disease is one that shows up in multiple forms. You know, and for us, it shows up with food. But it is a disease of relationships, no matter what the addiction. And so it does affect the people around us. And I think it's, in my experience, and I've heard other people share this as well, that it's easy to minimize the effects of this disease, that thinking, well, you know, how did my eating affect anyone else? You know, it was just me, you know, just to minimize the harm and the damage. And one of the biggest, you know, I think one of the universal hallmarks, as far as I understand it, of being in addiction is I'm not present. And I can feel it when other people are not present. And that makes relationships either impossible or really, really difficult. And so if I can't identify a specific harm, like I'm not lashing out at anybody, I can at least identify that. That when I'm in my disease, I'm not present, which means I'm not able to offer myself just the most important and also the hardest thing to do. So when I read this paragraph, I'm reminded of that, that this isn't just about getting a handle on the food. It's not even about, you know, cleaning up, but it's about changing the way that I show up, where I'm not just focused on myself and what I can get, and that I'm actually able to be there for other people. And I also have come to understand and believe that that some of this disease was passed on to me by people who didn't realize they were passing it on, and that I don't want to be part of that. You know, I can't control what happens to other people in my life, but I can pursue recovery and practice these principles the best I can in the hopes that that will impact others. You know, I'm going to be carrying a message regardless of the words that I use. So thanks for the opportunity to share. With that, I will pass.
Thank you so much, Freya H. Nicole C., you're up next, and then right after you, Devori F. will come on, and then we'll open up the lines again after Devori. So 6 more minutes, we're going to open up the lines again. Hey, Nicole.
Good morning. My name's Nicole C. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm in California. And A Vision for You is actually my home group. I've struggled with this for about 4 years, and A Vision for You is the only group I have found in Overeaters Anonymous that understands the literature, that understands the history, that understands the traditions, that understands the concepts. And for someone to recover in Overeaters Anonymous, I feel that this is vital. This is a vital group. I absolutely relate to everything in the book, and I very much relate to what we read today. I have always known that the doctor had nothing for me. My primary care has nothing for me in the way of controlling and enjoying my food. I've always known that that wouldn't be an answer, because when I put a certain food in my body, I don't have the same reaction that my husband has. I don't have the same reaction most of my friends have. They can take a bite of something and say, oh, yeah, not worth the calories, but thanks, and move on. And I take a bite of that something, and an hour later, I am overwhelmed by a phenomenon of craving that is indescribable to someone that does not have this progressive illness. We had a housemate for a little while during the world situation. She's just moved out, but when she was here, she would say, can you ever have sugar again, like even a little bit? And I told her, no, absolutely not, because I don't want to be obsessed by something that I have no idea what's happening. Because what happens to me physically is, if I take that bite, what happens to me next after that is I believe I've changed my mind. That's the way this works. I'll take a bite of this thing that I know I can't take a bite of, that I'm allergic to. And then an hour later, I go, you know what? I've changed my mind. It's okay. I know I can just have one. That's what this allergy looks like to me. Because there's a craving so powerful in me that it will disguise itself as I've changed my mind. And any time I've ever gone to my physician and I've lost weight or he's noticed that, he just says, good job, way to take the bull by the horns. Nope, that's not what happened, actually. I never took the bull by the horns and became successful. In fact, when I took the bull by the horns, when I got married 5 years ago, actually 5 years ago from Saturday, I barely got my wedding dress zipped up. Barely, after white-knuckling it for a year when I could not get my wedding dress over my size. And I will tell you that that week on our honeymoon, I gained it all back faster than Who Shot Willie, because everything was about the restaurants. Everything was about eating. I could not enjoy life any other way. That was how I enjoyed life. Mm-hmm. Food was how I celebrated. Food was how I comforted. Food was how I did everything. And it wasn't until I found... Thank you. It was not until I found this group, specifically A Vision for You, that I found real recovery. Thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Nicole C. Devori F., you're up now for 3 minutes, and then the lines will be open again for additional comments. And we are on paragraph 3 in the Roman numerals, Doctor's Opinion, XXVIII. Hi, Devori.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. I'll let you know, though.
You can hear? Okay. Hi, good morning. Thanks so much to everyone on the line. Thank you for everyone who does service for this meeting. I'm so grateful to have the meeting available. And thank you for everyone for being on the line and making this a strong meeting that it is. This is my first time sharing on this meeting, even though I've been listening to it for a long time. but this paragraph is very near and dear to my heart because as a compulsive overeater and as the wife of an alcoholic, I truly know firsthand what it means, you know, let them stand a while on the, I don't have the book right in front of me, but on the sidelines, watching the despairing wives, the tragic stories. And thank God, today my husband has 200 some plus days of sobriety, and he's working a program, but I have four young children, and alcohol truly upends people's lives. And anyone who has firsthand experience with a close family member that's an alcoholic can attest that it is, in a way, so much more potent and speedy and powerful, whereas food is a more slower, insidious disease, whereas alcohol overtakes the person immediately and they are just not present for their family ever. And for myself, I didn't have a very low bottom, thank God. I was never morbidly obese, so I wasn't an embarrassment to my family, my children, or anything like that. But I know what it means to have the obsession of the mind and to live more present and to be there. It's in a way for myself more than what's so obviously noticeable to those around me. Obviously, the 12 steps, you know, makes me into a different person, and my family can sense that change. But it's not like I wasn't, you know, available and present for my children in a way that they would sense it, especially because they're young. But just the compassion in that paragraph of the doctor's understanding of the severe impact that this disease has on the lives of everyone whom it touches, really just every time I read that paragraph, I'm just awed by the care and the sensitivity and the understanding and that this program really gives us what nothing else can. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you very much, Devorah. That's Devorah F. like Frank. The lines are now open for additional comments on paragraph 3, page XXVIII, doctor's opinion. Give me your first name and the first initial of your last name, please.
Linda P.
W.
Alki
G.
Linda P. Michelle.
Danielle W.
Oh, Danielle,
yeah.
W. Okay.
Yeah. Thanks.
Malky G.
Danielle. Malky. Hey, Malky.
Sherry Joe C.
Sherry, what did you say? Sherry Joe?
Sherry Joe C.
Gotcha. Okay, great. Thanks. Is that it for this lineup?
Jasmine E.
Catherine?
Jasmine.
Jasmine.
Yeah. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. Let's go with that lineup here. Linda P., Danielle W., Malky G., Sherry Jo C., and Jasmine E. Hey, Linda P., you're up for 3 minutes. And then it'll
thank
be Danielle.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Hi. This is Linda P., recovered compulsive overeater from New York. And that really touched me this morning. I'm doing
hey, Linda. I'm going to just poke my head in here for a second. Your line seems to be cutting in and out, unless it's mine. And I want to make sure
no,
that people hear the recording. Gotcha.
It could be mine. And if it does that again, I'm standing in it. I don't have the greatest reception here. Can you hear
sounds
me
really
now?
Sounds really good now. So stand really closely
okay.
Still.
Okay, I'm not going to move.
Okay, we'll start you
happens,
over. Yeah, we'll start you over.
Thank you. Thank you. And
gotcha.
If it happens
I'll catch
again,
you.
Just
mm-hmm.
let me know and I'll stop. So I was saying that it that there were many reasons that this particular passage really hit me. The first one being just how humble Dr. Silkworth was, and that is just the opposite of what, you know, the scientific community honors. They love the big, you know, reports and not reports, but studies and things that prove things. And this is just so different and so humble and so beautiful. I just think bless him for having the, you know, the courage and the humility to write what he did. The other thing is that for me, I always thought that, you know, my alcoholism, I thought, yeah, I was drunk. I did all this damage. I really didn't think the same about my eating. But this time around, when I did my fourth step, I really saw it very clearly how much damage I did and didn't think I did. You know, yeah, I had all these resentments, but weren't they because of this, that, and the other thing? But no, a lot of it was, you know, I remember being with a colleague and binging my brains out, and I was so angry at him. Well, how much of that was the food, you know, was, and what a relationship that ended, you know, what, hey, I was binging throughout that, not all the time, but much of the time, and what damage that did as well. And then watching, oh, the devastation in my family of my younger brother, and just thinking it can't get worse, and it does, and seeing that, yeah, he has mental issues, but the food just exacerbates that, and it's really sad to watch, so I can see that. And then the last thing was that this is, you know, the altruistic movement, you know, yeah, this is an actual movement. It goes against so much of what in our society is kind of me first, and, you know, it's about helping others. And I just love that. And I love that this kind of goes beyond just what we have here, but can kind of spread to the whole world. And I just think it's beautiful. And I'm so glad to be a part of it. Thank you. And I pass.
Thank you so much, Linda P. Next up is Danielle W. And then following Danielle will be Malky G. Hi, Danielle.
Hi. Thank you, everybody, for being here this morning. I don't know that I've ever really been as moved by this paragraph as I am this morning. There's so much in it for me. I think first it speaks to the depth of powerlessness, you know, the sleepless nights, the despairing wives. You know, you think about somebody who's dedicated their entire career and is not finding solutions. And just that level of powerlessness is very profound, because that's what the disease is. I mean, we were just completely powerless over this, and that he recognizes it. The other part of it is just the amount of courage to speak to his colleagues, because I think about that even today. You know, if a doctor came out and started to support a movement that sort of goes in the face of science, really, you know, I can only imagine, like, how he's risked his reputation, like, by speaking out the way he did. And I just think that's such an act of courage on his part, that he was able to recognize his own powerlessness in the face of this disease, and that because of the miracles of the program, and not just the miracles and the solution that he saw, but I don't know that this would have worked had it not been altruistic. I don't think the selflessness of the process, you know, made it, I think, I'm not saying this well, but it wasn't just a solution, but that it was a solution that came out of this altruistic movement. And as a result, he was willing to stand up, share what he'd seen, flying in the face of sort of medicine, and acknowledging that there was a solution. And I find it so moving. So thank you for letting me share, and thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Danielle W. Malky G., you're next for 3 minutes, and then Sherry Jill will follow you.
Hi, good morning. It's Malky G. from New Jersey. As we were reading this paragraph this morning, I felt goosebumps coming up all over me, and I didn't even know why. And I realized that this paragraph, I really was living it in a way deeper way today than I have been in the past. Today I'm living in a way that I know when I can look at my despairing husband and my little children and see the tragedies. I'm seeing the tragedies. I had to dig so deep to see the tragedies. And today I know that my home, my children, my husband are the greatest mirror to know where I'm holding today in my recovery. This just resonated so deeply with me, because I've lived it. I've seen the tragedies. I've seen what my disease has done to me, and I've seen the deep effect it had on my children. Watching children who are just groping, trying to hear their voice and hold themselves in society again because their mother has controlled every ounce of them is really painful, very, very painful to know what this disease has done. And the first line that I'm seeing that really stuck out to me is the how psychiatrists, the humility in the psychiatrist in these books is just something very, very different than the experience that I have experience of working with psychiatrists and therapists who, even though fantastic, and I'm not taking away all their expertise, but for me, they became a higher power. And what they did was is they told me what to do and how to do it and what is wrong and what is not as wrong, and I just followed it, only falling deeper in a hole because I was falling deeper and deeper into a human solution, and that would never work for me. It just doesn't work. And here in this paragraph, there's a psychiatrist saying something different. We don't have the solution, but there's some altruistic movement here that there's another solution higher than a person with a master's degree, which are fantastic. But in this room, I needed to hear the voice of my higher power. I needed to hear the voice of my higher power. And I live like that, and I can live one day at a time hearing the voice of a higher power, what he wants for me, and not society and not professionals, even though I do value their opinion. I'm watching my despairing husband and my children and the tragedy that befell in my home when I was living this way in this disease, one day at a time, slowly heal and slowly rebuild. And that's what it is. I'm living an altruistic movement that's growing up among men, among me, and among my home. Thanks so much for listening. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Malky G. Now let's open up to Sherry Jo C. to share for 3 minutes. And then Jasmine E. So in 6 more minutes, we're going to open it up for a couple more people to share on that paragraph, which is the doctor's opinion, XXVIII, paragraph 3 is our focus today to take apart. Hey, Sherry Jo.
Good morning. This is Sherry Jo C., recovered compulsive eater in Southern California. Yeah, this paragraph for me, too, it's touching. It reminds me of how... you know, I've heard over the years that I've been in OA and grateful to have been a part of OA and abstinent and recovered since 1989. But I remember, you know, first hearing is a disease that tells us we don't have a disease. Well, how do you fight that? You have a disease that tells you you don't have a disease, that it's not the food, it's everything else. And then if everything else would just change, then the food would get in order. But if you wait for everything else to change, you could be waiting forever. And so, you know, to me, that's why, you know, when I first came to OA, I was blessed with going to my home group in Detroit, Michigan, which I talk about often, because those women told me, it was in our opening, you know, this meeting is for those whose disease has reached the critical level. And that was true for me, and I knew it. And I was just so grateful, and I did. I just clung to OA, and I still do, you know, like my life raft, because it is my life raft. But when I read this paragraph, you know, I am reminded over the years, I mean, I've sponsored an average amount of people, not a lot, not a little, just an average amount. And, you know, I've seen what happens and when the disease tells us we don't have a disease, and it is such a powerless feeling, and I do relate to what they're saying here, you know, being on the firing line, seeing the tragedies. I think any of us in OA, they have any interaction, you know, with others here, with our fellows, we see it. And, you know, I guess I'm just reminded, what I believe is our recovery is in the moments. And my recovery over time in OA is an accumulation of all the moments that have just driven home more and more and more to me that I absolutely must be in the center of my program, actively working it on a daily basis, actively working with others, actively, you know, being absent, staying away from my alcoholic foods. And it's, you know, it's my memory of those moments that really drives my recovery home. And one moment that I have that really drives it home for me is I was at a family party. This was probably 10 years ago. And my brother-in-law, who was extremely overweight, had been to what he himself called a couple of fat farms to try and get on track. He'd had stents put into his heart. He'd already had 2 heart attacks. And we sat at the table, and he had, quote-unquote, sworn off desserts and such. And I watched the family bring this beautiful dessert for everyone to participate in, which, you know, I abstained from and he abstained from. Mm-hmm. And I had shared with him the program, but, you know, I watched him give in and eat the dessert, and I watched, you know, I just felt the powerlessness of not being able to really do anything when we aren't able to help ourselves. So I'm just grateful for the surrender that comes, and, you know, grateful that, you know, I do get to be here and I get a chance every day at a day at a time to live this program and to share it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sherry Jo. Jasmine E., you're up for 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Good morning. This is Jasmine E. from Loomis, California. So this paragraph always reminds me of my dad. I grew up in a household with addicts, and after my dad got clean, he became a substance abuse counselor, and he spent years and years helping people. And it reminds me of him, and it also reminds me of what it's like to grow up in a family like that, feeling really small and scared and, you know, all those things. And I've spent a long time sort of taking myself out of that, thinking that my food and my behavior around my addiction is different somehow, but it isn't. And I'm really starting to see that more and more clear as seeing the pain I've, like in my husband's face, and you know, how much I've hurt my family this way. And it's a really powerful paragraph to me, because to think that I'm any different than all those addicts that I grew up with is really problematic for me, honestly. And I really can cause a lot of pain. And that's painful for me to see. I'm seeing that, seeing it really clearly. But I also grew up with that beautiful, this fellowship, and how, and I got to see it as a kid, being in meetings as a little girl, and seeing this love for each other, and this, just what the 12 steps can do for people is really a miracle in so many ways. And I always wanted to be a part of it. I always felt that I needed to be a part of it, and I am now. So anyway, you know, it's kind of convoluted all over the place, but that's just what I wanted to share, and I'm really, really grateful that I'm here. Thank you, guys. I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Jasmine E. Okay, so let's open up the lines again for additional comments on paragraph 3, page XXVIII. If you give me the first name and the first initial of your last name, we can take about 3 or 4.
Nina.
Maria. I hear it.
Maria.
Sarah and a Nina.
Elaine G.
Maria.
Elaine G.
Maria T.
Maria T. Let's go with that and see if we can get through all 4 of those, okay? Nina S., Sarah S., Elaine G., and Maria T. So let's go with that lineup. Hi, Nina. Everybody else, if you press *1, please, to mute.
Oh, Jonathan.
Hey, Jonathan, I think I have more than I can put in today. You come back tomorrow,
okay,
and we'll get you in, okay? Thanks.
Sure, no worries.
No worries either. Yeah, you come back. You are on now, Mademoiselle. We're looking at Nina.
Good morning. Nina S., compulsive eater in Northern California. Thank you so much for all the shares today. This is exactly what I needed to hear. When I look at this paragraph, the part that really stuck out to me was let the solving of these problems become part of their daily work, and also the word encouraged in rehabilitation. So I know that if I do this daily, that I'll have encouragement and I'll also have the rehabilitation. And that's been my experience. Lately, it has not been the easiest for either of those. And what I find is that with all of the things going on in the world and the lack of person-to-person meetings, it just doesn't work for me. It's so difficult. So what I'm finding is that I have to listen to this meeting every day, and I have to write in my food journal. And when I do those things, I'm not hungry. But over the weekend, I didn't do those things because I'm nurturing this new relationship, and it's got me off in the morning when I would normally do those things. So then I got hungry and I ate some things that I didn't want to write down, and I did not like the effects of them on my body, because like this book clearly states, without a doubt, is that I have an allergy to food. I don't respond to food like other people, and I will have an effect because of that. And sure enough, if I continue to do research around that, then I do. So this is exactly what I needed to hear today, that it's an everyday thing. It's not, you know, my disease doesn't take a vacation. It doesn't take time off. It is every day that I need this work to continue to keep me on track and keep me in the hope, and not in the powerlessness and not in the unmanageability, but in the love of life and the love that I know that I can give my body. And at the beginning of the month, I always weigh, and that was not too long ago, and I was unhappy with what I saw on the scale because I was up a couple of pounds, and that I don't like that feeling, but I know that what my sponsor says is my weight is none of my business, and that's something that I have to give over to God, and that I can't manage that, because I couldn't manage it before and I still can't manage it now. But what I can manage is that I can keep my nose in the book and I can get my ear on this line, and hopefully with God's grace and all of your help, I'll continue to keep healing. So thanks so much. I pass.
Thank you. Oh, yes. Thank you, Nina S. Sarah S., you're up for 3 minutes, and then Elaine G. will follow you.
Thank you, and thank you for everyone's service and the wonderful shares. The word that pops out to me is altruism, and I don't have my big book in front of me, but it's such a big part of the program for me, and it's like an ongoing gift, the altruism that's given and in turn received. When I first came into 12-step rooms and listened to someone share, this woman, this tall, lanky, looked like a model, older than me, but beautiful, and you know, she was dressed well, and she told this story, and I was like, God, I wonder how much they pay her to come to this. Do they pay someone for every meeting? How do they raise them? You know, my mind is going like, this has to be a paid individual. And then, you know, soon found out that there are no dues or fees for being part of this program. But the gift she gave me, free, was really monumental in sticking around the rooms. And then in turn, working with sponsors who freely give their time and freely give their wisdom. And then when it was my turn to turn around and be a sponsor, and the fear around that, the anxiety around doing that job that seems like I needed to have all the answers and a manual and, you know, which page in the book is that answer on? And I realized all I'm doing is helping someone get through the big book. And I find myself in that same situation where I'm given these sponsees that have so much to give simply by reading this book, so much that's shared about their life that's congruent with mine. And I find, you know, I have so much gratitude for them. How much can I pay you to come back every day for the rest of my life and help me? Well, that's not what it's about. It's about sharing this path and this hard road we trudge of compulsive food eating that I've been in program 13 years, and it's a relatively easy, simple program, but not necessarily always easy. But I'm so grateful the price, the financial price is right, that I can take it with me always, whether I'm in plenty or with nothing. There's such generous people on these lines. So thank you, and I pass.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that, Sarah S. Elaine G., you're up for 3, and then Maria T. Looks like we'll have time. We'll check it out.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for your service. And I'm grateful for everybody's shares. Every day I come away with more and more and more, which helps me in my road to freedom. The thing that stood out to me from this is actually the very first sentence, which is a long one, but it gives us an insight into the psychiatrists and the doctors and just how human they are. I looked up here because he says, he speaks to the fact that they get sentimental. And sentimental means feelings of tenderness, sadness, or nostalgia. And I'm thinking to myself, tenderness. Well, another definition under tenderness is sensitivity to pain. And we are in pain. We are in tremendous pain, whether we admit it or not. And, of course, without our higher power, we wouldn't be able to deal with that pain. Without the support of the fellows and this group, we wouldn't be able to deal with the pain. So that says to me that the doctors, they were also in pain. I think it's because they felt helpless. And I believe that they felt helpless from the statement that he says, as you read further down, and why that they embraced this new program, this altruistic movement. We feel after many years of experience that we have found nothing which has contributed more to the rehabilitation of these men than the altruistic movement. So here you have very learned men, PhDs, and all those other letters after your name, and all of their book learning and all of their schooling and all of their on-site experiences, they could not help these people. And they found that this problem is the only way. So I was very moved by that, and I'm going to end it there, and I want to thank you very much for the opportunity for sharing.
Thank you, Elaine G. And then we will round this wonderful sharing time up with Maria T. as we then transition to the next piece of our meeting. Hey, Maria T., star one, please, for your three.
Hi, this is Maria T. from Norway, recovered in Norway. Really, absolutely loved the meeting. Fantastic. And, you know, this paragraph, it just kind of, for me, it kind of, you know, it describes from an emotional point of view, the desperateness and the hopelessness of the people that they're coming in contact with every single day, the psychiatrists in the hospital. And, you know, I think about what's going on in the world and the staff in the hospitals dealing with this COVID-19, and they must be feeling exactly the same way, you know, the desperation and the frustration and the hopelessness. And I think about my friends who, you know, friends and family who desperately wanted to try and help me, and, you know, they wanted to get the solution. They could see that I was desperate and obviously in a lot of pain, you know, physically, emotionally, spiritually, you know, I was totally in agony. And in fact, you know, I'd been in OA for over 20 years and, you know, being in a fellowship that was reading the big book for the last 14 years and knew the solution was in the big book, but I just couldn't get abstinent. I was desperate when I came here nearly 5 months ago at the end of March, at the beginning of COVID-19, actually. That was the beginning of my miracle, so to speak, because, you know, a vision, it just deals with everything, you know, every element of recovery. And I just can't believe how peaceful I have it and how I have never, ever been relieved from the obsession, the spiritual malady. I came into the fellowship in another fellowship 22 years ago with alcoholism. And, you know, I have never, ever known what it was like to have serenity. And, you know, I just can't believe it. It's just incredible day after day after day. As long as I keep putting the work in, because if I don't put the work in, my head starts going off a bit and I start thinking, you know, my mind starts to talk a bit more. And I think, oh, yes, I need to, you know, get to a meeting. I need to, you know, reaching out, looking for somebody to help, spending time with God. Because really, ultimately, it is about my relationship with God, you know. And I'm just so incredibly grateful. I mean, I can't tell you, my life is just, it's just like day and night today. So I'm so grateful to be able to sponsor and to be able to feel like I'm not a fraud anymore. So thank you for letting me share, and I'll pass with that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Maria T. And now we'll end the sharing portion of this meeting on the paragraph. Thank you so much for everyone to share and everyone that made this meeting possible to be here for people to share and see what recovery looks like. I am so honored to be a part of a great, fantastic, strong team. So let's start the transitioning process to the unrecorded portion of our meeting. We still have about 10 minutes to go, by inviting Kara L. to please read on page 164, a book is meant to be suggestive only, and then stick around. We'll say the Serenity Prayer together, and then we'll move over to the next section. Hey, Kara, good morning. Thank you so much.
Good morning. This is Kara L., recovered compulsive overeater from Long Beach, California. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.